Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio is everybody. Okay, well, not like, you know, like the world, like everybody, but the people who matter the most to this show, other than the fans themselves. That's right, I said it. Cheesy shout out to all of you listening to us here on NGSCSports.com, where we never stop all the way around. Of course, you can catch us on Twitter. I am at the SOTG and all that other stuff. We'll get to that in a minute. NGSESports.com. My website just said that too. We also hear us and download via Spreaker, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, TalkShoe, all that stuff. Just we're in a lot of places. Pretty easy to find us. And of course, you want to find Plenty Awesome. My co-hosts will not leave you short in that need of all. Of course, the man himself, Steven Weasel Hurley,
yeah, boy.
And of course, Chris coming in. Hey, he's not at the station. He's ready to take care of business. Yeah, there you go. Welcome. Thanks for coming in, Chris. Always awesome.
Yep.
Good times. Because football.
Exactly.
You know, at day's end, that's what we're here for. You know, can't front on that. Although I say because football, but we like to get a little societal and comparative here every now and again on the Student of the Game with other sports. Than our favorite, of course, which is football. And I've sourced this show for other things before in the past. I'm referring to Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. That happens to be on HBO, but you could probably catch it other places and other segments on YouTube and the like. But in this particular instance, during this month, they've had comedians come on and give a take about sports and things like that. But in this instance, they had comedian Chris Rock on to talk about baseball. Now, if you haven't heard about these comments, basically what it comes down to is he seems to be, as a baseball fan, he'll say, he's concerned that the numbers for black players are pretty low, and he assesses that that's part of the reason why the numbers for baseball happen to be declining. Basically, that's one way. I think that's the general thesis of the statement. He says some other things in there too, one of which I happen to agree with outright, that baseball is aimed at the white hair demographic, aka old people. Average fan base is 53, I think, something like that. You know, they're definitely up there in age. Youth sport, as far as youth sports go, little league participation is down 20%, some stuff like that. But he says a lot of things regarding the involvement of blacks in baseball. And I'll throw it to you first, Weasel. When you heard it, kind of walk me through what your reaction was.
Well, at first, you know, I read some articles about, you know, the Chris Rock thing. And then I got to listening to the video. And something that I was really impressed with when I first listened to it, because, you know, he's a comedian and all. But the thing is that he backed up pretty much all his statements with statistics and stuff like that. I think some of the random ones were, I think about 10 years ago or so, baseball was about 20% African Americans, and now it's about 8. It's
closer to 10, 8, 10, whatever, yeah.
He was actually a Mets fan before.
Uh-huh.
And
Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden, yeah. The like, of course.
Yeah, definitely a big mix.
Yeah. He was a Bill Buckner fan, too, I would assume, yeah, as well. But yeah. Anyways, I digress. Sorry, Red Sox fans, I had to make that joke. But anyways.
And so when he mentioned that the World Series, it was the Cardinals versus the Giants.
In this past year.
And something I was like kind of eye-opening was.
Wait, the Cardinals and the Giants, Arizona and New York made it? No, wait. Sorry. Baseball. St. Louis Cardinals, San Francisco.
That's not bad.
That's my bad. Go ahead, Weasel. Sorry.
He said that none of those two teams had any black players. And I was like, oh, whoa. And then he started about the numbers dwindling down and from 20% back whenever, and it's now about 8%. Looking into the stands, there's not as many black people around.
Per fan.
So, right. Per fan. And so, I liked how he made it very professional. He wasn't throwing jokes, spitting them out there. He did put some in there, you know,
as
his thing. But facts backed it up. So, I don't really watch baseball, but yeah, I thought it was very informative.
Interesting take. Chris,
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting with the when he said it was like down to 8% or 10% or whatever,
mm-hmm.
black athletes, but there is a lot of Hispanics.
There you go.
In baseball,
24%, I think, something like
right.
that.
Right. So I mean, and a lot of them are from the Dominican, Cuba, you know, down in the Caribbean. So I mean, they don't get that
Southern or Latin America, right? That makes sense.
Right.
Definitely not native to this country. Sure. So, but, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, if you look at it, I don't go watch baseball that often. I mean, there's so many games.
Yeah.
Anyway, 162 games, and you still have to play a playoff to figure out who's the best team. Just like a little overkill. They're all overpriced, overpaid to do what they're doing. And then, game's, like, really boring. So, you just sit there to watch a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... nothing's all that exciting. Yeah, you might get a home run here or there, a nice diving catch occasionally, but it just takes so long. I mean, I saw that in the spring that they started doing a 2-minute, 25-second inning change. This is like they had a timer on there.
Right.
I don't know if what the penalty was, if there was a penalty, if there was, you know,
if they went over
or anything, but you had 2 minutes and 25 seconds to get back on the field at the end of the change of an inning.
And there was a lot of people, a lot of old hat players griping about that, too. First of all, let's be clear. If you find baseball to be not cool, I don't think it has anything to do with the color of the skin of the demographic. And actually, I'm going to cite something I heard or a question posed by our very own NGSC Sports senior writer, Antoine Staley, a man of many trades. He writes hockey. He also writes baseball, too. Credentialed baseball writer at that, as well as being a fan himself. In his article on the website, ngscsports.com, check it out. It's there on the front page. Pose the question, because basically Chris Rock states that black people don't need baseball, but baseball sure needs them. I don't know about all that, but what I can say is this. When Chris Rock asks baseball to be quote-unquote more black, Antoine Staley asks, what does that mean exactly? I can't answer that. I mean, like, if I sent, like, I have the MP3 of Up In Here by DMX. Should I email that to all 32 teams?
Quite a great song. I like it.
I mean, I know that's your jam, Weasel, but, you know, I'm not even joking. Seriously, folks, that is his jam, I'm saying. Woo! But... is that supposed to solve? I mean, what exactly does that mean? And Weasel, I'm going to have to say, he did some research to find some numbers, but as I said in the sports symposium, numbers can, and in fact will, lie. Going to try to talk to me. Chris said it best with the diversity. Let me add something else to you. Name Asian relevant NFL players. Go.
Linebacker Patriots. Is it
Patrick Chung?
Yeah.
Does that count? He's actually a safety.
He's a safety, but yeah. Yes, that does count. Patrick
yes.
Chung.
Nailed
okay.
It.
Anybody else?
Heinoski, the fullback for the Giants.
Heinoski?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boom.
Is he actually Asian?
Yeah, I think he is.
But I'll give you even Manti Te'o.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan? Okay.
Well, he's actually Hawaiian.
Okay.
Manti Te'o.
I said I'd give it to you. I didn't think it was a good example. There's a difference. I'll even give you Manti Te'o. Yes, you're right. He's actually Hawaiian, but I'll even give you that. Because you obviously shouldn't get credit for it, right? We know here that I make fun of baseball on a regular basis, okay? I can name three Asian players. Hideki Matsui, Ichiro, and then Hideo Nomo. I don't think Nomo's playing anymore, but that's not the point. I don't follow baseball. I can name three players. We bust out the NFL every week. We struggled to find three, and it wasn't really three. It was two and a fraction. If that. I say fraction again because I'm just being nice and giving you Manti Te'o. His name sounds kind of Asian, right? I don't know.
No, it sounds...
I'm being silly, Chris. You're taking me too literally here. Name me relevant Asian NBA players.
Jeremy Lin.
Uh-huh.
Linsanity.
Okay. Who's the other one?
Yao Ming.
Yao Ming used to play.
Give me another one. Mm. You can't bleep and do it.
Mm.
Exactly.
Mm. Something Chung.
We don't even go over hockey.
Well, I mean, Hockey, I don't want to get into because that's regional less than it is cultural. You know, I mean, you have to know how to ice skate to play it. And none of us know how to ice skate because there's no freaking ice unless we go over to RDV, which wasn't even built till either of us were in our 20s. Okay. So that hockey dream for us is kind of out the window. But what I am trying to say is you're going to come on to me that there needs to be more diversity in baseball when they are arguably the most diverse populace in sport. You're going to call the NBA and the NFL diverse? Really? I don't know the numbers, but I can tell you that the athletes who play it are predominantly black. Do I have a problem with that? No, but it sure ain't diverse. Just an example. Oh, and by the way, in the case of NFL rosters, the volume of players total is higher, which means if you have a higher percentage, you're all that much more solid in a particular direction. Then he makes a comment about how, you know, the white way to play is the white way to play in true Chris Rock fashion. Didn't tell any jokes, but just kidding, please. When one of the more outspoken people, when it comes to breaking the rule, the unspoken rule of not showing up your opponent or any of that, as stupid as these rules are, by the way, in baseball, I'm not pro them in any way, shape, form, or fashion, but a couple weeks ago, one of the most vocal examples of somebody complaining about another player breaking these rules was Jones. I can only think Adam Jones. I don't think that's his name. But Jones was his name. A black man. So there's some holes in this logic. Chris has it on the head. The problem with baseball is that the tortoise beats the hare in a race and never watches baseball because it's too boring for him because he's already beaten the hare. What's the point of speed? In other words, it's slow. Being at a baseball game is more of a leisurely activity where you talk to your friends and bond with your son or daughter or family. And the reason why you could do that is because the action is so slow. Hey, nobody's going to, you know, throw a pitch for the next 2 minutes and 20 ever seconds because we're changing innings. How'd that test go last week, son? But that's a race problem? I don't get it. I'm sorry. You both went quiet. Am I that correct over here? I mean, what?
I heard what you're saying.
Now, granted, there are a lot of other inherent problems pointed out as well by Tuan Staley. I got to give him his credit. That scholarships for baseball are much more difficult to find as far as full rides go. They have like a 30-something man roster, but only 11 full rides they can offer, I think, or something like that. Or it may even be 11 scholarships total, and of those, only the elite ones are full rides. Most of them are one-third, which, you know, I don't know many families in any in most socioeconomic classes that can afford a college education, two-thirds of one, I should even say. So, you know, the paycheck, the instant gratification money-wise, isn't there like it is in the other sports. Think even hockey, you have a better shot because you have a better farm system and you could always play in Canadian leagues or overseas or anything like that. It's basically like the NBA with a smaller demographic watching it, I guess. I don't know. Not to mention, I'm not even going to get into the whole thing where he says if you want to win, if you want to reach young America, you have to go what's cool according to black people. Tell me something, guys. You probably don't watch Game of Thrones, but I'll tell you what. Not many black people in the show. And yet Snoop Dogg and company come out with an album rapping about the Game of Thrones. Now, look, again, I don't have a problem that he came out with the album. But black people wasn't what made Game of Thrones cool. Just throwing that out there, too. So, you know, yeah, stop it. See, and that's the thing, Weasel. He threw some statistics in it, and people think it sounds smart. Some of the statistics were smart. Unfortunately, they were just dramatically misapplied. I'm not getting on to you for it. I'm getting on to him for it, for making his thing seem smarter because he had some numbers on a sheet. Anyways, I don't know. But yeah, I guess, like I said, you were right about some things. The numbers are dropping. The question is that baseball's fault, or is it just not that interesting anymore? I don't know.
Well, I was just pulling up the percentage for basketball also.
Interesting.
And they actually dropped in basketball. They were 80% in 1997, and now they're 76%.
Racist bastards.
So, shop there. I was getting ready to try to pull up the NBA, right? I mean, NFL, but.
Well, in the case of the NBA, that number is changing because of the international element, your Manu Ginobili's and things like that, right? I don't know. But yeah, 76%, that's unacceptable. That's way too low. Note sarcasm. Anyways, so I had to call out that silliness here, you know, using my forum that I can, unfair advantage of having my own show. If you don't like it, of course, hit me up on Twitter at the SOTG. Of course, there's also at Weasel the SOTG. You can talk about how awesome he is. And then you can talk about how awesome his Twitter name is when you tweet at Hydraulic Upright, U-P-R-I-T-E. Good times. Weasel.
Boom.
Boom. The Hydraulic Upright is worthy of a boom. You're right. That's my bad, Weasel. Way to step in. I can't front on that. Anyways, going on a little bit more serious stuff, at least in this instance, we're keeping it NFL in this case. Greg Hardy hit with a 10-game suspension based on, well, I'll say based on allegations more than anything else at this point, because it gets complicated. So Weasel, correct me where I get it wrong, but so last season he was suspended because Greg Hardy, was suspended from the Carolina Panthers because he had an active case involving his, at the time, I guess.
His former girlfriend.
His former girlfriend, thank you, Weasel. And was found guilty in that case, was sentenced, appealed the case, and settled it. So, yeah, what do you got, Weasel?
I'll try to do a little bit of a chronological run through.
Yeah, but short and sweet, baby. Give me the point.
Pretty much, I think it was last year, I think it was in May, there was it was an assault against the former girlfriend.
Okay, too many facts. Give me the short version.
Pretty much, okay. So Nicole Holder was the victim, and there's just some things like, let's see, that he beat her, threw her around the apartment, threw her on a beanbag with assault weapons, and all this stuff. So
Pluton, whatever, right.
Went to a judge, and the judge found him guilty. It was let's see, misdemeanor domestic violence charges.
Right.
I think I said it was 60-day suspended sentence, 18-month probation, and because he like fabricated like a 911 call and the things that he did allegedly
a 911 call. No, we could say that he did the other stuff because of the proceedings, but the alleged fabrication of a phone call did not. He's not charged with any sort of communication law or manufacturing evidence or anything like that. But, yeah, anyways.
So it was a couple months later. He immediately tried to get an appeal going. So that was, I believe, in July. Mm-hmm. And the appeal, they couldn't do anything because Holder, the victim there, she didn't show up. Right. Now, I think... the reason why she didn't show up.
Hold on. Don't speculate. Let's stick with the facts for the moment. So he appealed. He appealed the case. She didn't show up.
Yeah, they tried finding her. They couldn't find her.
And in other words, there's some sort of there was some sort of a civil situation where they settled, and Hardy admitted no wrongdoing.
So, pretty much the last thing I'll say. Look, so last year he missed 15 games.
Right.
He was on the exempt list, I believe. So he got paid when he was franchised that year, $13.1 million.
Right.
So pretty much that whole amount, I think the team paid him.
Yes.
And I think a portion of that $13.1 million went to the former girlfriend.
Allegedly. So, now, okay, again.
Yeah, allegedly.
Let's keep your theory out of here. I know you think you paid her off and all that, but we can only go based on what we've seen. You know, legally, right? We are more journalistic, even though we ain't journalists. We're more journalistic than a lot of other outlets. We're not going to go throwing things around. But you have speculated this on the other show when it first came out weeks back that you think she got paid off. Not saying you're wrong, but let's stick to this. What I do want to concentrate on is after that point, fast forwarding to now, going into the 2015 season, Hardy's since changed teams. He got picked up by the Cowboys. And now gets slapped with a 10-game suspension. First of all, before we move forward, I'm just going to ask this question. 10-game suspension, pop quiz, right or wrong? Weasel.
it just complicates things with having him. He missed last year. So 10 games, I mean, with what he did, I would say it's fair.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah, I say it's fair.
Okay. Well, and then
we talked about it before. We were thinking, you know, I was saying it should be around 12 games or whatever, 10 or 12 games originally. And I said I wouldn't be surprised if it was 4. Still appeal it. Could still be 4.
Right. Right. There's history for that.
Right. So, but the league, what they did was with the 10 games, they kind of put it under the new policy and did a misconduct instead of a domestic violence thing. So they can try putting it under the new policy since it's a conduct, since he wasn't technically charged.
Right.
And that's why the new one with policy would say 6 games would be a suspension, but then the league can either increase or decrease based on facts that are evidence. And that's with all those, you know, thrown around, all those other ones that he was originally charged with.
Right.
So that's why they went up to 10 games, but he can still appeal it. But I don't.
Which he's in the middle of doing. That's
right. Which I don't understand why the league doesn't do. Like, look, you were suspended last year with an exemption list of $13 million, put in a stipulation. You appeal it, you got to pay back the $13 million to the league or whatever, or to a charity, or try to do something like that. You know, since he was suspended last year, he appeals it, he wins it. Should have like the little stipulation in there as well, of paying money back.
Well, okay. Keep in mind, his appeal was one in legal court, not involving the league, right? The league hadn't officially made an action against Greg Hardy to this point. Now, I don't know how you guys feel about this. In fact, I'll ask you. So, I like Weasel's 15-game time served piece being considered here. So, basically, he's going to serve, in your mind, a 25-game suspension if he doesn't win and serves the full term. Is that about right, Weasel?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So, here's the question I have to pose. Now, according to this new policy, which was basically put in as a knee-jerk reaction to Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, all this other stuff, and basically fan outrage, which, look, not for nothing, you can't fault the NFL in this instance. They listened to the fans and gave them what they asked for. The problem is, the NFL's falling into that trap, we've talked about it on this show before, of being the judge and the jury and executioner in manners where society has already judged somebody a particular way. I mean, right? This is just an unfortunate situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess where I am, yeah, the punishment is right, but I don't know. There are still people out there who are like, Greg Hardy should be banned for life and are just not happy no matter what the NFL does, which is kind of the position they put themselves in. I don't know. Go ahead, Weasel.
I read that just about that time, I think, when like the assault charges and stuff were going on. I think it would have been maybe 2-game suspension, 4-game suspension. But around that time, that's when the Ray Rice incident happened.
Correct.
And now it's like, we can't just, you know, suspend him like this set ways. We got to judge how heinous or judge how serious the crime is.
Yeah.
And we'll just adjust it according to that. Nothing really. It's tough to, you don't have something like a rule, like a guide to go by. So.
Here's where I'm at real quick, because everything you said there is absolutely correct, Weasel. But here's the part that I can't get past. Society, even if he was found, well, no, not even if, I'm sorry, when he was found guilty, thank you. According to what I'm hearing, Weasel, he was not facing jail time. Is that accurate?
What I saw, 60-day suspended sentence. So I'm thinking I'm thinking 60 days of jail. I don't know.
Well, and then 18-month probation.
Yeah.
So 2 months. That's not even a full off season.
Yeah.
So he appeals and wins, regardless of whatever extracurriculars that are suspected by various members of this panel. The law of the land has said that he can walk free. Yet the NFL can transcend society's ruling. I have a problem with that.
You got to look. Last year, the NFL didn't come up down with the suspension. It was the Carolina Panthers that put him on the exemption list.
Correct.
So punishment still can come in for conduct. That's what they want to put him under, was for conduct. So
that.
So any suspension now is through the NFL. The team did it last year, so the NFL wouldn't have any part of it last year. So the NFL is just handing out the punishment now. So you say 25 games. Well, really, 15 of the games was the Panthers was the one that suspended them until the, you know, until the appeal on November 17th of last year.
Well,
so they had them on the exempt list. So the NFL now, once they got all the facts, they're waiting until they get all the facts and everything like that, and that's when they handed out the punishment.
Okay.
Because you still had the police report on everything on there. You had the original guilty verdict of it.
Right.
And it was just because it was thrown out because the witness doesn't show up with the appeal.
But not just the witness, the victim, right?
Right. So.
Yeah, and all that's correct, Chris, but where I'm still at is whether, regardless of who levied the punishment, there's still been one levied, and he's still served some time, right? I mean,
well, technically, he really didn't serve any time because he still got paid.
Oh, yeah.
So he got paid for doing nothing.
It was
so
it was a franchise. It was he was franchised. So 13.1. What? Because I think the previous season he had like 15 sacks or so, and so
and he was a Pro Bowler the year before.
Exactly.
So
he didn't. He hasn't really faced any punishment yet because he still got paid, even though he didn't play. He still got $13.1 million last year.
So
he has not had any kind of punishment on him.
Okay. So then, in that instance, let's say he pays what? $12.5 million of it back. I'm not well versed on my 16s times tables, but $13.1 million. Obviously less than a million. He pays $12.5 million of it back.
It's just kind of weird with, because, well, comparing it to Peterson, think of for Peterson, he was on the exempt list. I believe it was for about 10 weeks. And he was under the impression that he can use time served from the time he was in the appeal process,
right,
like with the exempt list. And so he later got suspended, I believe it was, the six games to end the season.
Right.
And during those six games, he was not paid.
Right.
But the first, 10, money.
There was some, true, and there were some other things in the Peterson case that make it different. But the point that you're getting at, regardless of anything else, is that there were still monies levied to the player. That, of course, from our standpoint as fans, makes a lot of sense. However, what you're telling me then is the only entity that loses out in this instance, as far as on-the-field production, has been the Carolina Panthers, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, granted, one could argue that the PR that they got from suspending Greg Hardy is well worth, in fact, maybe even worth more than $13 million. But here's the thing. The NFL is making these maneuvers to punish these players for doing these heinous things against women in the domestic violent cases, all this stuff. And you can't help but notice that over the course of the last season, we've actually seen an increase in female viewership. An increase in female viewership. So they're still happy with something around there. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe granted, we've said this before on this show, and correct me if you think I'm wrong on it, but maybe it boils down to the fact that it took the Ray Rice video to get the NFL to crack down on this behavior like people think the NFL should. It's unfortunate, but that's a human nature thing. That's not a football thing. That's not a sports thing. That's not a baseball thing. That's not a Chris Rock thing. That just is. Maybe seeing that reaction has restored faith in a portion of the populace. I don't pretend to know. But all I see right now here is a lot of mixed message, a lot of confusion. And really, it all boils down to what happened, to various things that happened in both the Peterson, but mostly the Ray Rice case. Moving forward, though, I mean, what happens then when someone gets busted, and they're found innocent after a huge suspension is levied? Then what?
So people can make accusations against the players, and the thing is even if it's not true, I mean, they most likely got to go if you do the court system and all this stuff. But yeah, I just worry about the day when there's going to be false charges thrown around against players.
Well, I mean, it's happened.
So what do you do? Hey, go on the exempt list. Here's your money. So
yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It's tricky. The teams suspend the players so they don't face punishment, but then the players are still in trouble. I don't know. That's if there's anything a players' association is involved to fix, it's things like that. Certainly, and I think this is, you know, obviously a fact that the policy repair was knee-jerked in the fashion that it was, Chris.
Yeah, no, I was just reading the letter right here that the NFL sent to Greg Hardy, and it was stating that, you know, there was an extensive 2-month investigation into the original charges.
Right.
And that there was determined that there was sufficient credible evidence that Hardy engaged in conduct that violated NFL policies in multiple respects and with aggravating circumstances. The letter went in to inform Hardy that investigators concluded that Hardy used physical force against his former girlfriend in at least 4 instances that included placing his hands around her neck and applying enough pressure to leave visible marks, shoving her against the wall, and throwing her on a futon covered with at least 4 semi-automatic rifles.
Right, as Weasel Knight.
Right, but with a ranging of injuries, including bruising, scratches on her neck, shoulders, upper chest, back, and arms and feet.
So the point is, boiling all this down to, it's one of the first phrases associated with Roger Goodell when he first came in. Protecting the shield. You can't be beating up your lady if you're trying to play in this league, because we ain't trying to look bad with you beating up your lady while you're playing in this league. Be that may be callous, that may be money grubbing, that may be all that, but the truth is, if it leads to a better societal result, so be it. That being said, I think it's now at a point where, if it hasn't gone too far already, the NFL is in danger of having to be a second judge, jury, and executioner, even though decisions have been levied in civil courts and criminal courts for our society already. That's ludicrous.
But this is a job. You gotta look at it as a job. If you do this in any other job, you're most likely fired.
Not necessarily. See, here's the thing. It ain't the fact that it's a job that gets him fired or suspended or any of that. And actually, we got to wrap this up here too, because we're past break here. We need to get Montel Hardy here to talk some draft. But if I'm Joe Schmo on the street, no one hears about it. I go to my boss's office and say, hey, look, I missed work the other day because I was in jail because, you know, me and my lady got into a fight. He'll be like, you know, that sucks. Make sure it stays out of the office. Let me know if you need counseling through HR. That'll be all. Anyways, I don't know. That's an interesting concept with the job and the punishment he might face in his workplace. But you know. Anyways, let's get back to actually talking some football here, too. We're going to take a break right quick. And on the other end, we'll have Mr. Montel Hardy of NGSC Sports Draft Central. And, of course, the NGSC Weekly, the flagship show as well. Awesome stuff all the way around there. But until then, let's get the music rolling, and we'll get right back to you after the break. See you in about 30 seconds. You're listening to The Soon of the Game on NGSC Sports. Football. Oh, hi, everybody. Yeah, right. This is the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. Here with me, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Weasel, Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
And, of course, Mr. Hydraulic Upright himself, Chris Rankin, breaking it down. And, look, when it comes to the draft, I know I don't focus on it. Weasel and Chris kind of do. We don't call ourselves experts. For that, we bring in the big guns. The man himself of Draft Central, one of the participants in the NGSC Sports 2015 mock draft, the first of its kind on this network, and just an all-around young man of awesome. Please give it up for Mr. Montel Hardy. What's going on, Montel?
Not much, Kyle. It's a pleasure to be on the show. I really appreciate the intro there. Young man of awesome. I think I might get that one, you know, just tattooed somewhere.
Yes, exactly. We'll get a poster for you or something. Like, you know what I should have done? I have a whiteboard here with all my notes. I should have had that underneath you in quotes. Young man of awesome. That'll work, you know.
Anyways. Indeed. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So, and how can you tell me that there's not much going on? I mean, like, it's 3 days till Christmas for you, right? I mean, isn't that how it works for you, DraftKings?
I mean, absolutely. But, you know, if you plan well, then you don't have a ton to do heading into it. A lot of conversations right now, some last-minute checks, making sure people are staying out of trouble, trying to see what the word on the street is in terms of certain selections. But the good news now is that, you know, a lot of the quotes have been put out there, and a lot of the things have been said, and in the words of ESPN, and now we draft, right? So that's all I'm doing, just keeping my ear to the ground and just trying to see what these prospects end up being taken here come Thursday in the first round.
Well, I'll say this much for you. I didn't bring you in here to quote ESPN. I'm here for your mind, not for their wannabe skills. Let's be clear on that for a second, okay? There's no Joe Flacco action. Oh, wait. Is it too soon to do the Joe Flacco joke? I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Here we go again. One day, Kyle, whenever he decides to give that Hall of Fame speech, you will be envious that you didn't listen to me when I told you he's a good quarterback.
Hey, you know what? I'm not even going to lie. If that happens, I haven't decided how, but I will compensate you in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But and before I start giving you gifts for the impossible, let's give the world out here listening to us gifts of draft awesome. I'll give you the opening question I go to whenever I'm talking to somebody smarter than I am about the draft, which is a lot of people, but I digress. What I'm trying to say is this. I am of limited knowledge on the draft. I managed to play nice with you guys on the mock draft show, but as somebody who's moderately at best draft wise, I'm going into this draft. What is it that I need to have my popcorn ready for as I watch on Thursday night?
When you watch on Thursday night, there's a few things you need to be cognizant of. A, where does Marcus Mariota go? The consensus is two, but is it straight up to the Titans, or does another team become involved? Does Cleveland make the jump off? Does Chip Kelly somehow work his magic? You know, someone's going to have to trade up to two to get Mariota, and the key is, you know, does it happen? Does it not happen? I think the second story here is where these edge rushers fall. You know, these outside linebacker, defensive end, hybrid players, everyone's board might look different. Some people really like Bud Dupree, you know. Some people really like Randy Gregory still. Other people like Shane Ray, even though he didn't do too well at his pro day. A lot of people are interested in these edge rushers and where they fall in the first round. I'm projecting that somewhere in the neighborhood of 5-6, possibly 7, will be taken in this year's first round. This year's edge class is like the receivers class of last year, except it's not quite as top-heavy. I don't know if you have that transcendent pass rusher in there, other than maybe Leonard Williams, but plenty of value there on the board in round one for these edge rushers. So go ahead and grab your popcorn, Kyle, and hope your Niners get involved.
Oh, God knows they need to. What is it? Dan Scuda, Chris Boylan, and Patrick Willis all gone, and what? Bowman maybe at 80% after that injury. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Chief. It's not like I'm making Cutler jokes over here, all right? That's not fair.
It's not time to reload, Kyle, that's all. Little time to reload.
See, this is why he's a young man of awesome here. This is a whole lot of positive outlook. And, you know, I'm going to throw this one to Weasel here, speaking of positive outlook. You mentioned, by the way, just in passing, how pro days matter, but they really don't. I'm sure Weasel still, for the moment, is happy with Mr. Bridgewater at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, I think that was a North Turner. He mentioned that, like, people, they value so much on this pro day. And the thing was, the guy could be off. I think it was, there were, like, these obstacles where it had, like, a broom up or something. And it represented a defender charging in, putting his hands up. And he didn't do good at that. And it's like, people, I mean, a lot of times you got to look at the tape. But pro day? I think one thing about Pro Day, I think another thing that Kelvin Benjamin, what he did, at least when in the combine, I think maybe for other teams.
We're not bringing up the Kelvin Benjamin tank the combine to get to the Panthers theory. All I'm saying is
Pro Days, think about it, but don't let it make your decision.
The draft files commercials were fake too, Weasel. Deal with it. Okay, stop it.
All right.
I just want to talk about Teddy Bridgewater and give your Vikings some love. Why you got to go there? Why you got to go conspiracy theory?
He was a good pick by the Vikings.
But anyways, conspiracy theories aside, break down some of your in-depth theories regarding trade possibilities that could be surrounding Adrian Peterson. I know you and I were shuffling a few of those over the weekend. Go ahead, man.
I think there's a few different – I'm sorry, was that for me?
Go ahead, Monto. Hardy, you're the expert. I was just looking for Weasel to start some trouble, which he obviously already did.
All right, well, Weasel, okay, I'm gonna tell you what I know, and you can fill in the blanks for me. Right now, I've heard a handful of teams are interested right now, including the Buccaneers, the Cowboys, and a few others. But I haven't learned of any serious contenders because I do know that it sounds like Minnesota wants a second-round pick. How do you feel about that?
What I'm learning is that with the Vikings is that they pretty much have all the leverage. That Peterson's got nothing. I mean, the thing is Vikings decide what he's going to do. They say that they want proper compensation for him. And I'm thinking the Vikings, that means a first round pick and maybe they especially need a cornerback or something like that. Maybe a player or two. Now, the one thing about this whole thing is that I think you're one of the greatest, you know, running backs, and like I would call him in the future, top 10, top 5 maybe ever. He's getting to get paid about $13 million. People are saying he's over the hill. Well, not over the hill, but for a running back, it's over the hill.
He is 30, yes.
And it's just you have some teams. One I'll mention is the Arizona Cardinals, where they got the 31st worst rushing last year. 3.3 yards average was the worst. And they got two players. You got Larry Fitzgerald, 31, turning 32 in August. And you got Carson Palmer, 36. Now, I think the Cowboys, they said they haven't even been talking with Minnesota about any trade possibilities. Jacksonville, they're a possibility. But, yeah, Tampa, they kind of see the number one pick in the second round. That's kind of like a first round pick. But it all comes down to the team about if they can get compensated properly.
Well, let me put this in a particular direction. The question that I was looking for, that Weasel and I were kind of bouncing around, is if the Vikings have the opportunity, check that. If the Cardinals have the opportunity to trade the 24th pick, in the draft to the Vikings for Adrian Peterson, is that a good exchange?
I don't believe so. I don't believe in drafting running backs in the first round, and that's essentially what you're doing, except you're drafting a 30-year-old running back in the first round. Now, I know it's AP. I know Adrian Peterson's a phenomenal athlete. He's a great running back. But when you look at your board and the value that's there, Todd Gurley could be there. Take him, wait till he's healthy, and watch him. I'm not saying he's Adrian Peterson, but he's going to be a serviceable running back, and he's going to be a great ball player. All he's got to do is just stay healthy. That's the only real knock against him I have. So I understand that there may be lacking, the value may be lacking after pick 23, 24 as you get into 25, but just trade back and get some value, man. Trade a second for AP. Don't trade a first. Come up with a combination. But for a team like the Cardinals that have to fight in that NFC West, they really have to come away with a great player every draft, really, especially in the first.
Okay, quick questions. First, Todd Gurley, where do you see him going in the? He's going to be first round, I'm pretty sure. Where do you see him going? Like, about what?
There's a lot of destinations that I've heard of. I would be. It could be as high as San Diego. There, I believe. San Diego picked maybe 17, yeah, somewhere 17. In that area. I think San Diego might take a look at him. I think New England will take a hard look at him at 32. I'll just go ahead and say that's the floor. Given their needs, I don't think New England lets him buy. Also, when you take a look at the way the board may fall, there's a chance that, a team like the Ravens, if value isn't there, corner, this is a very deep quarter class. You might want to go running back here and wait and see what happens later. So lots of teams here can strike gold and just take Gurley and redshirt him for a little bit and see where it goes. And I'm sure we know the Colts are major players too.
Okay, now one more guy. You got Melvin Gordon, running back for Wisconsin. Pretty much, I think they were like the number two backs. Melvin Gordon, do you think he can fall to the second round, or do you see him getting picked because his talent is supposedly up there around Gurley?
I think, a lot of people talk about the tiers of certain positions. The truth is, this is a very deep running back class, but Todd Gurley is in his own tier. He's a special type of great. And Melvin Gordon is towards the top of that second tier of backs. So I don't believe Melvin Gordon's a first round pick. And to an extent, I would not love to take him high mid second round. At my board, he's my number three, number four running back. So it's very difficult for me to say that he's in the same class as Todd Gurley. Even though I think both guys are going to have great careers or good careers, it's just that Gordon's, he's just not the freakish athlete that Gurley is. Not quite as powerful. A little bit more agile, but not really much faster overall. Also an unproven catcher out of the backfield. So not the freakish athlete that Gurley is, but someone who will probably get denied sometime in the middle of the second round.
Quick pop quiz question there, Montel. Which is more important for a running back coming out of the draft, the ability to catch out of the backfield or the ability to block?
It's a very good question, Kyle. It's a great question. See, the funny thing is, if you can't do one, you better do the other. that's a joke on that. I really think because we're in a passing league and because every team now is either searching for or they have that transcendent wide receiver, it's almost better to have a back that can pass block. You can have a career just being a very good pass blocking back and getting the occasional carries and then catching a couple out of the backfield. So, in all seriousness, give me the back that isn't the best catcher but can block for his quarterback because chances are you're going to have other targets that you can really rely on.
The saying goes you can't both be an Elvis fan and a Beatles fan. It sounds like you and I are both Elvis fans and preserve guys that can block over pass catchers. Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, okay. We're talking about the second round pick with the Titans. If they don't find anyone, like any trades or anything like that, and they decide not to go with Marcus Mariota, you think the Jags would try to trade down?
Say that one more time.
I said if the Titans don't pick Marcus Mariota in the second pick, they don't like any of the trade offers or anything like that. They pick some other like a defensive end or defensive tackle. Do you see the Jags? Do you see the Jags trading down a few picks, try to just gather a little more picks?
Do I see the Jags trading down a little bit to try to get their guy?
Try to get anyone. I mean, the last rumor I heard, they really liked Amari Cooper, which they had two rookie receivers last year with Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson.
And I get it. And I think to an extent, I think you just got to let that grow, man, to see what that becomes. I wasn't too high on Marquise Lee, but they took him, and he might be a solid possession guy for them, number two, number three wide receiver. But Allen Hurns, I like his ability to be a number one in the future. I think you just got to deal with the growing pains. I did think the Jaguars would maybe try to get themselves a veteran wide receiver this offseason. They couldn't do it. I just don't know how much when you look at their selections, there's going to be plenty of receivers there. But if you're the Jags, you're shopping for that immediate number one, and I don't know if they can afford to just, spend another pick there. I think if you want to help the pass game, you might want to protect Blake Bortles. Get yourself a tackle, address the tackle situation. But right there at three, maybe get an edge rusher. I think a lot of people are looking at either defensive end named by the USC, or maybe Vic Beasley, edge rusher out of Clemson. A lot of people are taking him there in their mocks.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They could drop down like three or four and still get an edge rusher, and then also maybe get another pick later on, second, third round, just to even move down a little bit so that they can build up the offensive line.
Get your value. Absolutely. I think the separation between each of these edge rushers is very overrated. I think either five of these guys are going to go on to have great careers, or five of these guys are going to have very mediocre careers, or five of these guys just won't make it. in all seriousness, there's I think some people are putting one or two up there. There is no one elite guy. There's a bunch of extremely good guys, a few excellent guys, but I'm with you. The Jags can trade down and get more of what they want, get the receiver, get the edge rusher, and later round one, round two, I think that's a very good situation for them to be in. So if they can swing it, I wouldn't hesitate to accept the offer.
Yeah, I was with you. I don't think they need another receiver. I just heard the rumor today, and I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. But
smoke screen.
Yeah, I just think they should actually just trade down because they need offensive line. And defensive line actually wasn't that bad. Yeah, they got rid of Red Bryant over there, but, I mean, still got Chris Clemens. But, I mean, their defensive line wasn't that bad. I mean, the secondary's young. They're growing together.
Tyson Alualu. That's right. I love saying his name, and it's a good excuse to talking about that Jags D-line.
And that's what I said. I said the D-line is a bad. That's why a lot of people mind for Leonard Williams there. I don't think they take Leonard Williams in all seriousness. I think they either get an edge rusher or they go elsewhere. And obviously the clue here is if you get Beasley or Fowler or whoever, they're going to be more of a linebacker than a lineman because you just said it. I believe they do have a fairly adequate defensive line.
So when it comes to the Jags and the draft, beef, it's what's for dinner. Duh, duh, duh. That's right. I said it. What? I did the whole commercial throwback joke. Don't judge me, Weasel. Stop it. Anyway, so, you know, I also noticed that Chris mentions a couple of smoke screens there, too. First of all, the fact that Zach Mettenberger is a young Tom Brady. Right. Anyways.
I was just saying Tennessee needs a lot more than a quarterback right now.
I know. I agree.
And
with
so
you.
Use a pick at number two. I don't see why they would just pick Marcus Mariota there when they could use an edge rusher, they could use a defensive tackle, they could use an offensive line, could use receivers,
absolutely.
They could
and
use running backs.
And guys, you know, I did my mock and I mocked them. I mocked them a pass rusher. I mocked them Leonard Williams. I gave him an edge rusher. You know, I did some different things. People were tearing me apart on Twitter. I'm like, look, your team just needs to take the best player, okay? And in the AFC South, it's just not a strong division. You don't need a great quarterback to win. Texans, I mean, they had Fitzpatrick. They almost won it. They had eight wins, you know. So I think if you can rush the passer and run the football, you'll be right there. So I don't know what Tennessee's going to do, but I really don't think they can lose here as long as they get value.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Texans as somebody who's an example of someone who could win without a quarterback, but not every team has J.J. Watt. Gratuitous J.J. Watt reference. Thank you. Thank you, Montel. That was wonderful. See, I got my jersey right there behind Weasel's head here in the studio. It's fantastic. He doesn't want to turn around, but, you know, I don't blame him. I said, oh, it's right there.
It's over there.
It got you in the face. Anyway. Chris, do you have anything else?
Oh, that's why he's always nervous in here. Yeah, Walt,
and guess what? I'm thinking about getting Vince Wilfork, too. Oh, no.
All right,
anyways,
so,
we got
oh, God.
Okay, so I'm going to throw out a list of quarterback names that aren't the top two. We got Garrett Gerasim, Colorado State, Brett Hundley, UCLA, Bryce Petty, Baylor, Sean Mannion, Oregon State, Shane Carden, East Carolina. We know about the top two. But of those remaining quarterbacks, I think that was pretty much number three through number seven or so. Which do you see as being the best that can be a future franchise quarterback?
He's speechless, I tell you. Speechless.
Now, I'll go dark horse here. Now, NFL circles are saying Bryce Petty, quarterback out of Baylor, will be the third guy. And maybe he is, you know, that transcendent player who could be as good as the top two or somewhere in that range. I get it. He's built like a tank. The arm isn't as strong as people think, but it's adequate. And I think he has the mobility, some of the things you look for, but he's really got to break himself down and learn the complex NFL offense, and it's not spread, no huddle, and there's a lot of key things in there, and that's why to me, and I'll just go on record right now, recently I've got into evaluating quarterbacks, and I have a new way of doing it, and I've been scoring a bunch of different guys. It's been crazy. But anyways, a guy I like is Cody Fajardo, quarterback out of Nevada. That guy to me, and I have rankings, I put him in the middle of the road starter category, which means he can hold down a starting spot for, you know, in the neighborhood of 5 years in the NFL. Whether he goes up or down is obviously dependent upon the situation and his commitment to the game. But and it's also miraculous to score because in this class, I mean, after your top three, maybe four guys, everyone else should be considered a career backup. That's how bad this quarterback class is. But going back to Fajardo, A, I love his body of work. This guy who played 3 to 4 years in college. He's very mobile, ran in the 4.6s in the 40. No one seems to know or care. Very powerful lower body, broad jump, nearly 110, 111 feet. That's basically a running back broad jump. So I know he's not the tallest guy, but 6'1", 223. He's got some muscle. He can take the big hit. And so I like his agility and the fact that, you know, he can throw too. Quick setup, quick release, and he's an excellent decision maker. See, this is the thing. People take guys, and I'm not going to pick on Jameis Winston because I know he's going to be pretty good, but people take guys, say like Anthony Boone and other quarterbacks, and they say, hey, you have a, you know, okay touchdown interception ratio, so let's draft you and get that better. Truth is, it doesn't get a whole lot better. You know, look at quarterbacks like, you know, your Jay Cutlers of the world, your Andy Daltons of the world. These are quarterbacks who have been, in terms of touchdown interception ratio, just as good in college as in the NFL, and sometimes it's not very good, not good enough, and some people have gotten slightly worse. So, in this case, I think Fajardo's ratio was excellent. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback for somebody, and he's going to fight his way into competition maybe the next year. I think he's going to need a year to develop, but I think when you got him, you're going to hit the nail on the head.
Is there any of these quarterbacks that you're researching that could take a snake-bitten franchise to the playoffs 4 seasons in a row? Oh, I'm sorry. That was an Andy Dalton question. My bad. Anyway.
go to the playoffs, what, 6 times and have only 1 touchdown? Pass?
4 times.
4 times with only 1 touchdown pass?
Oh, I'm sorry. Because the Bengals. Go home, Weezy. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. God, you will make excuses for this guy. You know, the narrative out of Cincinnati is just not very pro Andy Dalton, for the record. And their draft will be going back to basically trying to help him fall into some production. They're probably going to get him a slot receiver and hopefully an offensive tackle.
A tackle, really? I would have been expecting them to look in the interior of the line, but what do I know?
It could be interior. Bottom. They're just going to get someone to help protect. It could be guard. You're right.
Oh, snap. Okay, there you go. Montel said I was right. I feel better about myself now. Anyway. Yeah, okay. Well, fair enough. Of course, because Helloding Nada is no longer in that division, all AFC North offensive lines have improved dramatically anyway. But that being said, I want to leave you to with this last question, a bit of a pop quiz for you here once again. I've heard comments about the depth of the edge rusher spot and also the receiver spot in this draft. Who takes the cake?
Out of all players or just at each position?
Well, no, I mean, of those positions, wide receiver or edge rusher, I hear that those two are the most deep in the draft. Which one is most deep in your mind? Or is it something completely different?
Okay, no, that's fine. You know, I'm looking at the two positions, and I see, I think, you know, I'm getting through my position rankings now. I got to say it's wide receiver. This year's class is different from last year's in the sense that it doesn't have the plethora of number one guys, number one receivers. You know, Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, Odell Beckham, those are all first-round picks. You know, this year, you know, you have Amari Cooper, Kevin White, Devontae Parker. Some of these guys are going to be twos, but they're going to have great two careers. You're going to have a lot of Isaac Bruce guys in this year's class. You're going to have some Torrey Holtz in here, guys who don't wow you with some of their plays, but they're going to have steady consecutive Pro Bowl careers. And I think the receiving class is the deepest. I think you look at guys like Amari Cooper, Kevin White in round one, round two. In my opinion, Breshad Perriman's a round two pick. Dylan Dorsett, Nelson Aguilar will fall somewhere between one and two. You can go to round three, Trey McBride, all kinds, you know, Trey McBride, wide receiver out of William and Mary. So all types of value here from rounds one, three. You know, you can look at four. There's a guy, Tyler Lockett, who might be falling down there out of Kansas State, had himself an incredible combine solid career. My advice is a very bad quarterback play, but just so much value all across the board here at the wide receiver position. And basically, if you take one anytime before day three, and it even depends on who you take on day three, but you can get yourself a solid number two or slot guy at nearly any point in this draft.
So, Chris, yet another Breshad Perriman disc not going in the first round. What are you going to do about this, man?
No, it's fine. They'll be shocked on Thursday when he's at the bottom there. He's going to either Baltimore or New England.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, it could happen. It could happen. I just, you know, if my job depended on it, and that's what I tried to do. I put together my board, I do my mocks, I say, if my job depended on it, what I do, and I probably say no, but if someone else was to be really confident, you know, in their position and their standing with the organization, then yeah, go ahead and do it. And sometimes it pays off.
Well, and I think that's the right approach. Unlike Chip Kelly, who asks the player if they can find Oregon on a map, and if the answer is yes, he drafts them. Anyways.
or they play it in the Pac-10.
Correct. That's right. So at any rate, that'll do it for our time here with you, Montel Hardy. Go ahead and tell all the people where they can find you at.
Yes, and thanks again to you, Kyle, for having me on the show. It was a blast doing the NFL mock with you almost 2 weeks ago now. It was great. Great job on that, buddy. But thanks again to everyone on the show. You can find my work at ngscsports.com on the Draft Central tab. You can follow me on Twitter at MontelNFL, at MONTEL, capital NFL. Thanks again, guys. It's been a pleasure.
All right, man. Thanks, Montel. You take care, brother.
All right.
So I like how he made a little bit, made it almost musical. At Montel NFL. Just saying. I think there's an I don't think there's an underscore either, so that works out. Anyways, now that we're throwing out Twitter handles and all that, we're wrapping up. We might as well do it. He's Steven Weasel Hurley. Where's?
Yeah, boy.
At Weasel the SOTG. And of course, my man Chris. You can find him at Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE.com. No, not .com. It's a Twitter handle, dummy. Anyways, Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE. And of course, I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game at the SOTG. You can find us on the website, www.ngscsports.com. Of course, check out the NGSC Sports YouTube page if you haven't yet for the Sports Symposium. The first episode has been up for about a week now, maybe two, whatever. It's awesome. Watch it if you haven't. Do yourself a favor. And, starting to get finish the script for the second episode. My video guy, Demosthenes Euclid, currently at work throwing that down as well. But yeah, so the draft is Thursday. Have fun with that if that's your thing. But until next time, everybody, class dismissed.